Okay, tonight is Wednesday night, February 7th. This is the women's Mishnah Gemara Shir. We're learning Maseches Chulin. And we're doing a sugya tonight in Yoredeya in Siman Tzadik Ches.
Say, Rabotai.
We're going to focus on an issue tonight which we have mentioned in the past, and see two, three other sugyot which will present a major challenge to the halakha which we already know. So if you take a look at the top, the source Aleph, this is a section of Shulchan Aruch which we once read, and I want to just reread it tonight because that's the point of departure for the shir. The title of this chapter in Yoredeya is "What do you do when something that is prohibited gets mixed up with something that is permissible?" Din isur shenit arev beheter veofan bitulo. What do you do if something prohibited gets mixed up with something that is prohibited? So I'm going to read the halacha of Shulchan Aruch. Isur shenit arev beheter min b'she'eino mino. If you have something that got mixed, something that is asur, that got mixed up with something that is permissible. And the two items are unalike. They're not the exact same type of food. So it's not that a piece of kosher steak got mixed up with non-kosher steak. That's not the issue. On this particular topic, we're talking about something prohibited that got mixed up with something permissible, but they are not similar products. Kigon, chelev, shenit arev bibasar. Chelev. Chelev is prohibited fat. Got mixed up with kosher meat. And it all got mixed up into the pot, and it was cooking, and now you can't recognize the fat any longer. It melted, it got absorbed into the meat, and you can't recognize the fat that initially was congealed as fat, and now you can't recognize it. So what are you supposed to do? What do you, you know the answer. What are you supposed to do?
Give it to a guy.
What?
Give it to a guy.
Good. Why do you give it to a guy? So that he can taste it. And why can't you give it to a Jew? Because in, no. Why can't you give it to a Jew to eat it? Because if it is treif, he can't eat it. If you will notice the taste of the fat, if it'll have a fatty taste, then he will have eaten chelev. So therefore, the Shulchan Aruch writes, "Yitta amenu ove kochavim, a Gentile shall taste it." Now, in the last time we learned this halacha, I did not show you Karo, I showed you the Ramah on the next page. But he's not on this page. He was on the next page in the Shulchan Aruch. That's what we learned last time. Because the Ramah says, what type of a Gentile should it be? Beefsteak Charlie. He's an expert. Karo does not even require an expert. He just says, Yita'amenu ovei kochavim. Let a Gentile taste it. The only thing that Karo requires is that the Gentile who tastes it should not know that our eligibility to eat this piece of meat depends on his answer. Does anybody know the three words for the halacha that I just told you? It's called Masiach Lefi Tumo. Masiach Mem Samach Yudchet Lefi Tumo. Tuf Vav Mem Vav. Masiach Lefi Tumo, just off the cuff. He just says, yeah, it has no meat. Tastes like meat. No fat. Doesn't taste very fatty. So that's all that Karo requires. Yita'amenu Oved Kochavim. So the so now we're going to look at the Taz, who speaks about a Jew perhaps tasting this. And we are going to see why his question is a very good question and why the answers are not terribly compelling. And we might be stuck unless you can come up with something to give the proper answer. So now look at the left, the Taz. Yita'amenu Ovei Kochavim. Katav Bidrisha. It has been written in another commentary called the Drisha. Mid'osar B'Yisrael Limit'am. Since Karo prohibited a Jew from tasting it, Mid'osar Yisrael Limit'am Bo, Yesh Lumod, we can learn from this, Shepa'amim Shekonin Basar Min Hakatzav. If you go in and buy a piece of meat from the butcher, Ve'ein Yadua Im Maluach Hu Imlo, you don't know whether or not he salted the meat or not. Now, in that time, that would be a major question. We don't have that question today. Every piece of meat that you buy in any meat store has already been salted. But years ago, as we mentioned, that is not the case. So, how will you know whether or not it's salted or not? How will you know? You'll taste it. Very simple. You'll taste it. So if you tasted this piece of meat and it had a salty taste to it, so now you can be assured that there is no blood that is prohibited on this piece of meat. Because the problem is not the salt. The problem is if you did not salt it, the blood has not been extracted. And well, I'm not asking you to taste raw meat. Not asking you to taste raw meat. What did you do with this piece of meat when you bought it from the butcher? You cooked it. So now what happens to the blood that's inside a piece of meat when it's cooked? The blood gets purged as a result of the heat. And as a result of the continued cooking, that very same blood gets reabsorbed into the piece of meat. So now, if you're going to taste it yourself, Jew boy or Jew girl, under those circumstances, what's going to happen? You might not notice any salt on this piece of meat. And then, what will you have retroactively eaten when you took a bite of this? Blood. The penalty for eating blood is karet.
Even though the meat is kosher.
Even the meat is 100% kosher. That's correct. So the Taz now says, who is going to have to taste it as to whether or not it's a salty piece of meat? No, he doesn't require beefsteak. A Gentile. You'll ask this Gentile, please taste this meat. What does it taste like? What does it taste like? It tastes like meat. Is it unusually salty? No. Yes, no, whatever he says, we will be guided by. If he says no, you're not allowed to eat this piece of meat. If he says yes, taste salty, you're allowed to eat the piece of meat.
But if you say unusually salty, he might think that normal is a little is Has this meat been salted?
Has this meat been salted? Do you notice any salty taste? That's all we need. That's it.
You said I usually salted. That's why.
No, no. So I just because you know me, I like to exaggerate everything. So fine. Now, one other piece of information about the process of melicha. When you salt the meat, did anybody here ever salt the meat? You remember salting the meat? Okay. Does it get every ounce of blood out of the meat? No.
You said it's the major, but there's a certain major areas that you're supposed to get it out of that it does.
No. It doesn't get all the blood out. So philosophically, or halachically, how can you eat any piece of meat, even if you did salt it, unless you could guarantee that every drop of blood has been purged? And you know better than I that you can't guarantee that. A lot of the blood does come out, but not all of the blood.
And it doesn't count, right?
The question is, why not? And the answer is, because melicha functions in two ways. Number one, melicha extracts blood. So the blood that comes out, you don't have to worry about, because it's going to be poured out. Then, melicha is what's called a matir. When you fulfill the halacha of melicha, it enables you to eat the rest of the blood that's in that meat that will be purged when you're cooking the piece of meat in a pot. It will be purged. And what's going to happen when you continue to cook it? It's going to be reabsorbed into that piece of meat. But you're allowed to eat that meat. But even though you're eating blood, it's a hard halacha to digest. That if you don't engage in salting, then you're not allowed to eat any of it. But if you do engage in salting, the very same type of blood that comes out and will be reabsorbed is permissible, because melicha is matir it. Once you follow the rabbinic edict of melicha, that enables you to eat any other blood that might be remaining, despite the fact that it will be purged in your subsequent cooking. So that's a halacha that you have to remember.
It's like the intent of it is enough to...
Yes, if you...
So you have to do it, but I'm saying...
You have to do it.
It doesn't sound like you have to do it so exact.
You can do it as exact as you should, but it's never going to extract every drop of blood. That's a physical fact. It will not extract every piece of blood. But nonetheless, once you perform the mitzvah, that mitzvah of melicha is matir any other blood that is remaining in the cavity of the meat.
So I guess I'm asking, do you have to try to get...
No, you just have to follow procedure. So what's the procedure? Run it through water to make it soft. You pour the salt on. You let it sit there for half hour or an hour, whatever it is. Then you wash it off again. That's it. That's what you have to do. That's what you have to do. But a Jew cannot taste it, because if he does wind up tasting it as not salty, then he undoubtedly ate blood. And that's asur, as I said, under the penalty of kares. Very nice.
It's like a very bloody liver. You have to do differently. You have to broil and then turn it over.
Correct. We pointed out that the liver is different, because it is so much blood in the liver that the melicha can't accomplish its objective. So the only way to eat liver is to eat it, to roast it. And the blood that comes out drips on the fire and you'll never be reabsorbed.
You also have to salt it. You have to put it in a special thing.
That's only midrabbanan. Midoraisa, if you broil it, you don't need any melicha. Our minhag is limloach kitzat, just to put a little salt on it before you do the livers. When was the last time you made liver in that little thing? A long time ago. And my mother did all the time, just to make those livers. And at the time, I was, who wanted to eat? Kids eat liver? What, are you kidding? Ugh. Now I love it. Fine. So that's what the halacha says. I want you to take this halacha, which we just reviewed, Leges Amayin and Keshela, and then we're going to read two other areas of halacha, and based on these areas of halacha, I want you to ask a dynamite question. Dynamite question. Okay? Okay. So now look at source bet. Source bet is based on a Gemara in Masechet Brachot, and this is the Shulchan Aruch talking about the following halacha. I'm going to read halacha Aleph. Hesharui b'ta'anit. If somebody is in the midst of a fast, yachol lit'om k'dei revius. He or she, on a fast day, is permitted to taste food up to a revius of amount of food. A revius is 3.3 fluid ounces of something. You're allowed to put that into your mouth on a fast day. We'll talk about which type of fast days in a minute.
Not Yom Kippur.
Not Yom Kippur and Tisha B'Av, definitely not. It might be permissible on Shavuos B'Tamuz and those. And if it's not, it only means the type of fast which you declare upon yourself. For example, there are people who fast on a yahrzeit. Fast on a yahrzeit.
After a dream. After a bad dream.
A bad dream, yes. So, now that I mentioned, I want to dedicate this shiur to, in the memory of Rachel Shulman, Rachel Golda, Bas Saraleya, V'Yakov Binyamin, and who yesterday was the Levaya, and she was a wonderful person and a spectacular teacher. So the Mechaber says, somebody was in a fast day, yachol lit'om k'dei revi'it, ubilvad sheyiflot. As long as after you taste it, what do? You spit it out and don't swallow it. Don't swallow. This opinion is authored by the Rabbeinu Hananel. This Karo is citing Rabbeinu Hananel's opinion. That when we allow te'ima, we require that you don't swallow the food that you are tasting. So why would you want to taste food on a tinus? What? That's the number one excuse. I'm cooking for my kids. Does it need a little more salt? Is it cooked? Is it too hot? Whatever the excuses that you need in the kitchen to taste the soup or not, whether it's cooked enough, whatever it is, so you put it in your mouth, then you spit it out. However, there is one of the Balei HaTosafot who says that when the Gemara discusses ti'ima anata'anit, you do not even have to what? Spit it out. As long as your intention is not to eat, but your intention is to what? Just to taste, then you can put it in your mouth and swallow it. And swallow. Up until the revius. Yes.
Question? The question?
What? All right. Good. So you can. I will stop the share right now.
No.
So what's the question?
That, like the regular guy. Why do you need a guy to taste it?
Oh,
yeah. Eating it.
Exactly.
That's
going to be the dynamic question. If we study these sugyot, why is it that you ever need a Gentile to taste it? Just. Especially the way the Rabbeinu Hananel learns that you have to spit it out. If I were to go now to McDonald's, buy a Big Mac, take a bite and spit it out, would I violate the prohibition of eating non-kosher meat?
Yes.
Well, it depends what your intent
is. I'm asking you a question. Before you walked into tonight, what would you say if I take a bite out of a thing and I spit it out?
No, I would say you are violating.
Well, the answer is you're wrong. Everybody here is wrong.
The comparison is
you violate nothing. It's asur midrabbanan. On a d'oraita level, you violate nothing. Why do you violate nothing? You can tell me.
Swallow.
Because, and what
you
does the Torah prohibit?
You didn't get anything.
One second. We'll see if it's you. One second.
Eating.
Torah prohibits eating.
Not tasting.
Tasting is not called eating. If you put a piece of matzah in your mouth, chew it, and then spit it out, have you fulfilled the mitzvah of eating matzah? No. Absolutely not. It's got to go down the trachea.
So what is the definition?
Well, can't have two people. What?
What if you ate less than a kazayah? Is that considered eating?
So here, yes. No. He allows you up until we're revered, which is more than a kazayah.
Because I'm thinking of fast days where you can eat less than a kazayah.
You're not allowed to eat less than a kazayah.
Chola
is something else. That's something else. That's Yom Kippur Pachos Mekashir. We'll talk about that some other time. That's not for now.
Revis is only if you're swallowing. If you're spitting out, you can do as much as you wanted?
No.
That's also Revis?
What does it say? Yachol lit om kidei Revis.
And then I spit it out, then can I take another Revis?
Maybe, yes. Why only up into a certain amount? There could be two reasons.
You could swallow more.
Two reasons. Number one, that you might swallow it. That's one explanation.
And the saliva gets in it.
And number two, if you put more than a revius in your mouth, there the benefit is so great that they consider it as if you ate it.
Well, what is the definition of eating according to the Gemara?
Swallowing it down.
Does it say swallowing?
No, it doesn't. But that Gemara says you need what is called Hana'at Girono. Garon is your throat. You need the Hana'at that you get as it goes down your throat into. What does it go into?
The esophagus.
Good. As it goes into the esophagus, that's when you have fulfilled.
But being satiated, honestly,
you don't
it
have
has to be in your stomach to have any feeling.
Correct. No? We're not talking about satiate. That's for benching.
That's for benching. But like the feeling good about eating has to do with taste, which is in your mouth.
Right.
And the feeling of
being safe. Right. But that's only
about your throat.
That's no. But the Gemara calls it. Because it wants you to digest it,
and you. What if you threw it up?
If you throw
all the way down and you threw it up,
you're yotzei the mitzvah.
You're bulimic.
You are yotzei. You are yotzei the mitzvah because you ate it.
Then you're bulimic.
You ate it. You did eat it. Who cares what you do later?
3.3 ounces is a large
amount. I didn't say it's not.
That's a whole meal.
But I cannot. What can I tell you? This is what the Gemara says. Karo is just quoting the Gemara that has Sharui Bita'anit, you are allowed to be Toei, and then he adopts Rabbeinu Hananel that when you taste, you have to spit it out. But the question is even more powerful. Yocheved's question is even more powerful according to the Tosfos Rid, who says that you're allowed to swallow it. If your intention is to do what?
Only to taste it.
You can even swallow it.
Wow.
Unbelievable. Yes?
I would find this a more compelling question if it were not just for an individual fast. But since it's just for an individual fast...
I didn't say which fast it applies yet to. That's going to be, as usual, another machloikis. So everyone agrees that this is talking about a personal fast. Everyone agrees that for a personal fast, you are permitted to do so. Then there is a second opinion that for all minor rabbinic fast days, those are those that are mentioned in Tanakh, you know, Shavuot Sabbatamos, Asar B'Teves, Tzom Gedalia, you're allowed to. That's a second opinion. But you're not allowed to on Yom Kippur and Tisha B'Av. The third opinion is that you're not allowed on any communal fast. It's only for a private fast. But whatever that is, we'll talk about that maybe later.
Because you're not allowed to, for Tisha B'Av or Yom Kippur, to do this, then they clearly don't consider it like nothing. They consider it some sort of eating somehow.
Right. So why not?
That's a very good question. So I'm going to give you an answer which will show to answer your question directly. One of the explanations why it's Asur on Yom Kippur and Tisha B'Av has nothing to do with eating.
Okay.
I'm gonna give you another halacha that applies only on Tisha B'Av and on Yom Kippur, and you now make the application. The halacha is, you're not permitted to put a tip of your finger in water on Yom Kippur. That's all I'm going to say. Why are you not allowed to put the tip of your finger? Because you're not allowed to wash on Yom Kippur. Good. So that when you taste something, what do you do? You produce saliva as a result of the food, and that is now considered as if you had put water into your mouth, spit it out, and that's also on Yom Kippur. For what reason? I didn't eat, I didn't drink, but why are you not allowed to brush your teeth on Yom Kippur? You're allowed to brush your teeth on Shiva Subatamas. Why are you not allowed to brush your teeth on Yom Kippur? Because it's rachitza. Putting anything in your mouth and spitting it out is a violation of the Issur Rechitza. That's why on Yom Kippur and Tisha B'Av, you're not allowed to put anything in your mouth, even if your intention is to spit it out. Not because it violates the Issur Achila. If it was the Issur Achila, then you could not do it on any tanit. Because by definition, tasting equals eating. So we could not. That's why it's limited only to, because none of the other fast days have the Issur Rechitza. Okay. Have the Issur Rechitza. But it's a good question. Yes.
Why can't we just distinguish between the two based on the fact in one case you're eating something that's treif, in the other case you're eating something that's just usher to you
at the time. Excellent. Just put it in the keshela. We'll get to that in 2 seconds. That's an excellent suggestion. It may not be right, but it's an excellent suggestion. Excellent suggestion. One of the great Talmudic luminaries of the previous generation, his name is Rav Shimon Shkop. You may have heard of Rav Shimon Shkop. He was one of the great Lithuanian Rashi yeshiva. Right after Rav Chaim Brisker, he spawned a whole bunch of Rashi Yeshiva. Rav Baruch Ber Leibowitz, Rav Shimon Shkop. So he wrote that as a fundamental difference, and I'll explain why he said it in 2 seconds. But we'll get to it in 2 seconds. But, so that's number one. That's number one. Now look at halacha number two. No, excuse me. Look at the Ramah. The Ramah says, the yesh machmirin b'chol tanis tzibur v'hachi nohagin. Says the Ramah, we should be machmir by any tanis tzibur. So the Ramah understood that what did Karo allow? What type of a ta'anit did Karo allow you to? No, just the opposite. All of the fast days, personal fast days for a yard site or a dream, and Shivasa Batamas and those. Says the Ramah, I am machmir for the public fast days, for the Taniyos Tzibur. I'm machmir. Not to taste it for your kid on Shivasa Batamas and Asar Bateves. What type of a fast are you allowed to taste it? Only if it's a personal fast, a yard site, or something like that. That's the Ramah. But Karo, apparently, without saying it, how do I know that Karo was more lenient? Because if the Ramah thought that Karo was stringent, he wouldn't have opened up his mouth. But the mere fact that the Ramah says something, we can infer correctly what Karo is of the opinion, without him saying it. Because at least the way the Ramah understood Karo, he understood Karo that everything is permissible, with the exception of Tisha B'Av, which, right. And he wrote, only B'Yom HaKippurimu B'Tisha B'Av Asar. Karo wrote that. So the other fast days would be permissible. Right? Now look at Halacha Bet. To your question. Yesh omrim shelo hitiru bepam achat elo me'at me'at. When do we allow you to taste something, even if it's a limitation of revius, not the whole revius at one time? A little bit at a time. For yes, Shomrim and others say, Sha'afilu b'pam achat yachol lit'om ad k'day revi'it im yodeya be'atzmo she'yachol l'ha'amid atzmo shelo yivlaklum. If you can guarantee that what's going to happen when you put the whole revi'is in, you're not going to swallow, then you can put the whole revi'is in at the same time.
And how big your mouth is.
Yeah. You got to practice on it today, which is not a fast day. So you practice putting it and spitting it out. So then when you have, you have to make noodles and cheese for your kids. What else do they eat? Noodles and cheese. Then or Wacky Mac.
You could require that you would have to make in advance and taste it in advance. Why do you have to taste it on the fast day?
Because you cooked it now 2 minutes ago. Okay. You didn't cook 6 weeks ago.
Fast day is on Shabbos. Thursday. I would have cooked yesterday.
Okay, that's Shabbos, but today's a Tuesday. Did you ever have that your kid all of a sudden wanted something that you don't have?
Shabbos, we say to them, sorry.
Tough, but okay, but the kid knows, he knows that Shabbos is Shabbos. But this is Tuesday. Good. That's halacha number one. Take a look at source Gimel. Just read Karo and it'll shock you even further. Hatoeim et hatavshil einot sarich levarech. No, that has nothing to do with the shiur. Sheurim are only for bracha acharona. When you, in order to make a bracha achrayna, there is an obligation to what? Eat a certain minimum amount.
This is not surprising because we're saying it's...
However, for a bracha rishayna, even a mashihu, a little drop of anything requires a bracha rishona. Here, Karo is saying that if I taste anything that I cooked, and only tasted it, you do not have to make even a bracha rishona.
Because you're saying it's not eating. So hey, would you make?
Now, this will make sense according to Rabbeinu Hananel. What about according to the Tosis Rid? Who says that when it says tasting, it means taste and swallow? He says you don't have to make a bracha even if you swallow. Because of the following reasons. No, he even swallowed it. So in order to understand why, turn the page for a minute to page to source Zion, which is the Kesef Mishnah. That's a commentary on the Rambam, written, authored by Rabbi Yosef Karo. And look at source Zion, and the next to the last line. Mishum, read the next to the last line. It says, Ve'achalta uveirachta. He skipped the word v'savata, because he wants to show you something. Shiyehelo kavanat achila mashma. That in order to be chayav to make a bracha, what do you require? Kavana to eat. When you taste, even though you swallowed it, there was no kavana to eat. And in the absence of kavana, says Karo, this is Rabbi Yosef Karo in his commentary on the Rambam called Kesef Mishnah, there is no requirement to make a bracha. And I'm going to explain it to you why in just a second, right now. Does anybody happen to remember the phrase in Masechet Brachot, Daf Lamed Hei Omer Aleph, which is the source of making a bracha rishona? Does anybody happen to remember the phrase? The phrase reads, Kol hane'ene ba'olam hazeh belo bracha, Ki'ilu mo'al, mem ayin lamed. Anybody who derives pleasure in this world without making a bracha, it's as if he violated the laws of mi'ilah. What is mi'ilah? Deriving benefit from the Beit HaMikdash. It's not yours to take. Rambam in Hilchot Me'ilah says that the only time that you violate the prohibition of Me'ilah is if you intended to benefit from the stuff that belongs to the Beit HaMikdash. But if you did not intend and you somehow benefited from the Beit HaMikdash, you do not violate the prohibition of Me'ilah. That's what the Rambam writes. It's Sot Ches. You can read it yourself, no problem. So since Me'ilah is the paradigm for Bracha, therefore the Kesef Mishnah says, if there is no intention to eat, despite the fact that you ate it, you swallowed it, it's not called eating. Hence, it does not need a Bracha.
Too bad you can't do that for losing weight. You know, you gain weight.
Yeah, that would be great. So good. So there are two areas of halacha where ti'ima is not called eating. One is vis-a-vis a tanit, and number two, vis-a-vis bracha rishona, making a bracha. Those are two areas so far where eating is defined as, according to the Rabbeinu Hananel, it's defined as swallowing it. Even if you had no intention, swallowing it by definition is considered eating. And according to the Tosfos, the Baalei HaTosfos, no. It's only if you intend to eat. But if you swallow something, non-intention to eat, under those circumstances, you are... that's not called eating. Yes?
This is why if you're taking cough syrup, you don't make a brush. Because you're not intending to eat.
Correct. You're taking it as medicine.
Well, any medication.
That's correct. But even cough syrup, it has a flavor to it.
Right.
Yes. Right. Yes.
Why do you make a bracha rishona on gum?
I don't. First, I never chew gum. But if I would, I would not make a bracha. Yeah. Because even though you do swallow it, that's not why you're chewing the gum.
You don't just swallow the flavor, you don't swallow the gum.
I know. That's the okay, but the flavor might be. There's a machloikus about it. Some make a bracha of shahakol on gum. Others don't. If anybody asks me, I tell them you don't make a bracha on gum.
Like a sucking candy or anything.
You do, because you want the candy. You're eating the candy. That's what you're doing. You're sucking it.
Eating it
slowly, right? But you're eating it.
And then,
what?
It doesn't explain the McDonald's.
Sure, it does.
You're saying if you're tasting it as you're fasting and you're just doing it because you had a taste because you're cooking?
Yes.
Right?
So, if in theory, what should have been the same halacha? If I go into McDonald's and I spit it out, I don't violate anything.
Those two cases.
Okay. So, now the question is, can you now go beyond it? Extrapolate to the McDonald's case? Or to our case.
Well,
to our case.
Our case, there was a reason. McDonald's is not a reason.
Our case?
Our case, there's a reason.
That's true. Case, okay.
McDonald's is like, why would you go into a... No, I know, but I'm saying, you're saying someone decided to do that. It's maybe if by accident.
Right. But I see, if we're discussing principles, we should not distinguish why you're doing it.
Yeah.
It's a principle that ti'imah is not called eating. So now comes Yocheved's question. Why does the halacha only say that whenever you have a prohibited item that got mixed up with a permissible item, you have to ask a Gentile to taste it? Why can't a Jew taste it? Just put it in his mouth and he'll be able to tell me, is it fatty? Is it milk? Does it have a milky residue? And then spit, either according to Rabbeinu Hananel, spit it out, and according to Tosfos, he can even swallow it, and it will not halachically be called eating. It will not halachically called eating. Yes?
Maybe they're worried that he's going to put it in his mouth, taste it, it will taste delicious, and he'll decide, oh, I want to eat this.
Okay, so why don't we say the same thing about a fast day?
Yeah.
You're going to taste your great vegetable soup for your little kid. Oh, this tastes great.
And you're hungry.
Exactly. And you're starved. Exactly. Why shouldn't you? So that's the question on the floor. And it's a very good question. So Linda suggests maybe there's a difference between where your issue is initially a permissible item. The original piece of meat was a permissible one. A little fat may have fallen on it. Versus something which is definitively what? Definitively...
It is permissible. The soup is permissible.
Okay, the other way around. There, by machalos asoros, you might be eating something prohibited. Here on a fast day, everything is what? Permissible. Everything's kosher. So it's just the day is the problem. The day is... Good, that's one suggestion. And I will give you...
Right.
That we are. That's why some people are more makel by chametz. Because it's permissible all year.
Right, but then therefore isn't halacha more machmir that because only
there's a spar for that also. Let's not get mixed up with chametz. So I want to give you an illustration of where somebody is more machmir because if it's ma'achalot asurot, I have to be more machmir. There is a famous tshuva of the Chassam Sofer who said the following. Somebody had a child, even at Chassam Sofer's time, who was not well and was certainly not chayav in any mitzvot. He was what the halacha would call a shoter. He is not obligated because his mental acumen is well below that of a bar mitzvah boy. So the parents wanted to put him into a hospital, an institution. Problem was, they didn't have any kosher establishments at that time. So they asked the Chassam Sofer. So the Chassam Sofer prohibited it. And he said, okay, you're worried about his mind. I understand that they're going to help educate him and so on and so forth. But all along, what are you going to do? What do you do with his heart? You're being mitamtem es halev. When you eat ma'achalot asurot, you pollute your heart. And this is what the Chassam Sofer said. Not everybody agrees with the Chassam Sofer. A lot of great authorities disagree with the Chassam Sofer. And in fact, it was just an ugly, ugly, ugly scene. There was this yo-yo of a guy who was in YU with me, who never registered in the college, came to the Rav Shir every single day, but couldn't tolerate Dr. Belkin. Couldn't tolerate him. And he would do everything to humiliate Dr. Belkin, even in public. Even in public. Even in public. There was a dinner that he was on. He had some of his gangs, his henchmen, had these big placards. And one of the things it said, that Dr. Belkin violated the Chassam Sofer. He had a child, apparently, who was put into an institution. It was guy's crazy. Well, the guy's crazy. Rabbi Riskin, when he... saw this guy like almost wanted to kill him. Almost wanted to kill him. Because after that dinner, it was like crazy. It's ridiculous. My brother and I went to Dr. Belkin and asked him, this is not a public library. This is a private institution. Just tell the guard that he's not allowed in the building. Dr. Belkin said, your Rebbe allows him in the shir. If the Rav would say, no, I would back it. But I don't want to, you know. And I spoke to the Rav about it. But he said, he's not so crazy. Okay, anyhow. So that's one possibility. That there is a distinction between kosher and non-kosher. That's one explanation. That because it's more of a Kabbalistic idea that non-kosher products are mitamtem es halev. But there is also a halachic difference. Somebody blurted it out inadvertently. When you deal with ma'achalot asurot, the isur is what's called in halacha an isur cheftza. The object is what is prohibited. On a fast day, the object is not prohibited. What is The prohibition is on the action against me eating. So when you're dealing with objects that are by definition asur, under no circumstances will we allow you to put any of those things in your mind, even though you don't intend to eat. When is intention a mitigating factor? When the prohibition of eating is on the person. So when the gavra, exactly. That's a tainis, is an isagavra on the person. That's one of Reb Chaim's famous differences. Gavra versus chefze. He used that 50,000 times. So an isagavra, where a person is not, so we can make an allowance if halachically he doesn't fit the criteria that he's halachically eating, because he's considered to ima. But where the item itself is prohibited, ma'achalot asurot, nothing is allowed. Excellent. Nothing is allowed. That's a second possibility. A second possibility. Yeah.
Back to the word
chafetz. No, chafetz. A chafetz is an object. Chafetz is an object. Chafetz means to desire. Yes. Yeah. 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 Now, there is, I want to test you one step further. The Rambam is somewhat, got to put that Rambam on, because he'll just listen. The Rambam, when it comes to a fast day, agrees with Rabbeinu Hananel that when you eat, you have to spit it out. But with a bracha, he agrees with Tosfot that if your purpose is to taste, even if you swallow it, you do not have to make a bracha. And everybody called on the Rambam, why was he inconsistent? Again, when it comes to the halacha of eating on a fast day, Rambam is careful to allow to ima. He allows you to taste on a fast day, but he insists that you spit it out. However, when it comes to making a bracha, there Rambam says, you're allowed to taste. If your intention is to taste, you don't have to make a bracha. But he does not put in the proviso, ubilvad sheyiflot, that provided that you will what? Spit it out. What might be the difference between ta'anit and making a bracha? Why is he more stringent against tasting on a fast day as opposed to tasting and the requirement to make a bracha? Why?
Well, because if you make a bracha inappropriately, that's what he's worried about, huh?
But if the halacha would be that you have to make a bracha, so he would say it. Why is it that if you swallow it, he says you don't have to make a bracha? Whereas by a tanis, if you're planning to swallow it, you're not allowed to taste it. Why? Why is he more stringent there than by making a bracha? What might be the difference? What might be the difference? So some cite that same Kesef Mishnah that I quoted 2 seconds ago. If kavana is an essential element of eating, the intention to eat, where is that pasuk found in relationship to what? To making a bracha. V'achalta v'sabata uveirachta. By fast days, it doesn't say any place that in order to be considered eating, you have to have kavana to eat. It doesn't say that. So what question would you ask? Well, if it doesn't say a unique kavana, what should have happened? What should have happened by the fast day if you don't have kavana to eat?
If
you swallow, it shouldn't matter. It's very, very difficult. I haven't really found a good answer to explain the inconsistency of the Rambam. Whereas by bracha, if your intention is to taste, you can swallow. For a ta'anit, if your intention is to taste, you're not allowed to swallow. Not allowed to swallow. You have to spit it out first. Hard to understand that. Very difficult to understand. That is gone, foregone conclusion. Ad kidei revius. Never more than that. Never. Well, revius is normally a liquid measure, so it's. So how do you measure a food in a liquid measure? How do you measure that? No. No, no, that's not it. That's the way you measure kizayit. You measure the size against an olive. But if it's liquid, correct. How much it displaces. How much, when you put the solid into a cup of liquid, and now when it displaces 3.3 ounces, it might be a little more than 3.3 ounces.
That's still
a lot? Okay, whatever you call it. But it's measured not by the normal achila, which is a kizayis. It's measured by the liquid measure, which is always a revius. A cup for kiddush has to have a revius of yayin in it. A revius.
So yes. Now if we go for a second to a chola who's eating a small quantity but purposely eating it and purposely swallowing it, and he's considering eating, is he making a bracha on that?
So now let's take that case on Yom Kippur. Okay? Here is the case. If the doctor says that he is currently a chole sheyeshbo sakana, he is in danger if he is not going to eat, there's no such thing as minimum shiurim. You give the guy as much as he wants right now. No discussion, no questions asked. And if the guy doesn't, you tell him he's operating against halacha. The case of what's called pachot mikashir is for somebody who right this minute is not in any danger at all. Not in any danger at all. But if he's going to continue to fast, a danger will develop.
It would be like a pregnant woman who may go into premature labor.
Okay, that's the number one question that I get before Yom Kippur. It's probably the most asked question I get all year.
We all know that.
Well, every pediatrician, every obstetrician says, you're not allowed to fast. I can tell you there have been several billion women.
It depends where you are in the pregnancy and your risk.
Right.
In other words, different, right?
That's correct. I ask all those questions. When? Did you have any miscarriages? That's also another factor that enters the question. But, okay. So that's a good example. Another example would be a diabetic. Somebody with diabetes, and if he's fasting, his sugar level is going to drop. And when the sugar level drops, you're in a lot of trouble. You're in a lot of trouble. So here is where the halacha comes in and says, you should be ma'achil him pachot pachot mikashir. There is a halacha that in order to violate any biblical prohibition in eating, the eating has to be done within a certain time span. That time span is called kidei achilat pras. The amount of time that it would take you to eat a plus worth of food. How many minutes is that? There are seven different opinions. Some say it's 3 minutes, some say it's 4 minutes, 5 minutes, up to 9 minutes. A lot of people said it was up to 9 minutes, and then I read a tshuva from Avadi Yosef, and he said, no, it's 4 minutes, and many said you can rely on it. Whatever it is, so what happens under those circumstances? You want the person to eat, but the person is not yet in a situation of sakanat nefashot. So how can you eat on Yom Kippur? So what you do is, you give him less than that shear. You tell him it's an ounce every 9 minutes. Okay? That's what it is. So if you wait 9 minutes, the first ounce which you took is done with. That's it. I didn't drink. It's done with. I did drink, but halachically I didn't drink. Had I drunk a little more within that 9 minutes, I would reach the prohibited level, which is a revius, whatever it is. So, on Yom Kippur, in order to enable people to fast, and not fast, because that will lead to potential, they came up with this very ingenious method of eating pachot, pachot mikishiur. Rav Chaim and the Rav always said it has no application to Tisha B'Av and any other fast. If a person is a diabetic and the doctor says you should not fast, eat regularly on Tisha B'Av. Certainly eat regularly. Don't wait until anything. Just eat. The only time that this is required, Pachot Mikashir, is on Yom Kippur when there's an Issa Kares to eat. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. It's Midoraita.
So now we're saying a bracha or nothing?
So there is, yes, because if you are allowed to eat under those, you're not being toein, you're not spitting it out. No, your purpose is to eat.
No, I know, but I thought you were considering it as though it's not eating because it's such a small quantity.
That's for Isur purposes, to violate the Isur. You make every single bracha achrona, even a minute amount, if your intention is to eat. On Yom Kippur, you're not tasting it and spitting it out. That would be counterproductive.
That means every 9 minutes it's a new bracha.
No. Because I know that what? I'm going to be continuing. Even though I can't be mitztaref for the Isur purposes, that which is in, for bracha purposes, it's much longer. It's 72 minutes. If you eat and then stop eating again, and you wait 72 minutes, you have to make another bracha.
That's not just for bread?
Anything.
For any bracha?
That's correct. And you cannot recite Birchat Hamazon.
If I take a cup of coffee and I know I'm going to have another one in another hour, second cup of coffee an hour later, I'm not making any.
If it's within the 72 minutes, you don't have to make another bracha. Yes.
I didn't mean to ask this about the very original case.
Okay.
Since it's two different meaning, remember we learned that you could, like, for example, cut off the top of something? Like if there's a piece of meat and there's something on it, you could just cut off the top of it?
That's without cooking it.
Right. So yes. This is, it's already been cooked?
That's correct.
You mix two things? That's
no.
That's why you don't even attempt
to
say
it. No.
Because, no.
Two different meanings.
Yeah, right. You don't taste raw meat. No, here it was talking, it's cooked.
It's cooked.
It's cooked. Okay. That's correct. Good. All right. We'll stop here. And we will not, there will be no shir next Wednesday. No shir next Wednesday. Going to a wedding.